Hello, I'm Michael Cantrell, and you are listening to the Prison Officer Podcast, a place to have a conversation about the forgotten cops that work in this country's jails, prisons, and correctional centers. A place for me to try to make sense of a career spent working inside the fence with some of the greatest people that nobody sees or recognizes for the important job they do to keep this world safe. If you love this podcast, hit the follow button, or better yet, share with your family, friends, or coworkers. In more than 28 years of corrections, I have used or supervised pepperball hundreds of times. Now, as a master instructor for pepperball, I teach others about the versatility and effectiveness of the pepperball system. From cell extractions to disturbances on the rec yard, pepperball is the first option in my correctional toolbox. With ranges up to 150 feet and hoppers that can hold 160 rounds, pepperball is perfect for controlling large crowds or group disturbances on your yard. Pepperball allows for non-lethal direct impact to control inmates who refuse to comply with lawful orders, and area saturation allows you to achieve buffer zones between groups, or use it for area denial to keep inmates away from security equipment and other accessible areas. To learn more about Pepperball, go to www.pepperball.com or click the link below in this show's information guide. Pepperball is the safer option first. This is a rebroadcast of episode 39 of the Prison Officer Podcast, Doing What's Right, Even When It's Tough, an interview with Glenn McDonald.
Man, there's something really, really, really bad going on here.
Yeah, they got a culture down there that's messed up.
Oh, man, terrible. So
how long did you stay at Coleman?
Let me tell you a story about Coleman, though. So, as you said, it was absolutely the dirtiest place as far as, like, contraband. So I don't know if you've ever heard of the Sharma case with the inmate.
Not right off, but.
Right. A lot of people don't know about that, and that's unfortunate because I think that would, if people knew about that case, it would, and actually looked at it and they'd actually talk about it in like training or something, it would really change people's minds about things. And it's unfortunate, but so I'm the, imagine that I was the SR lieutenant, SR1 lieutenant for probably just about 2 years, right? Imagine that. You know what time I was on.
Yep.
So shoes, absolute. It's an absolute mess. The shoe is an absolute mess. The officers down there didn't want to work. Sometimes they wouldn't let you in the door. I mean, it was just nuts, right?
Wow.
I'd go down there and do what you're supposed to do. You do your rounds, right? Some of the good officers that were there, like, hey, Mac, you got to get down here, man. This place is this going on. I'm like, so I'm writing this down. At this point, I'm writing stuff down. It's like, all right, you know, if something comes out, I don't want to be that guy, like, well, McDonald did it. And then I'll just take my notebook out and say, hey, you know, hold on a second. On this day here, you know, whatever you want to call me, you can call me. Snitch, whatever the hell you want. I don't give a shit, right? So
CYA, cover your ass.
You damn right. I ain't going to jail for nobody. Hell.
Right.
And then things were getting really, really weird. So I come in one night and I see a bunch of cars on the outside of the facility. I'm like, oh, this ain't good. Something bad happened. So I go in there and I remember walking in the lieutenant's corridor and we had a holding cell at the end of the hallway there, and there's a body bag in there, right? I'm just like on a stretcher. I'm like, ah, shit. before I even get in there, hey Mac, you know the control room. I was like, hey Mac, you hear what happened? I was like, no. So like, hey, animal killed Delano. I'm like, what? An animal was this notorious inmate, and Delano was the shoe orderly. So I'm already walking down. I'm like, this ain't good. Then I see the body bag. I'm like, gosh. So I get in there and like, there's like FBI guys in there. There's SIA. You see the SIA, you see the SIS staff and you're like, yeah, this is bullshit. Something ain't right here. Something is not right. So your spidey senses are already up. So I relieve the lieutenant. I take over. And boom, man, like out of the gate, people are like, hey, Mac, this. I'm like, listen, I don't want to. Listen, stop. Don't tell me shit. I don't want to know a damn thing. Nothing.
All right.
And I think I got like mandated the next day. And the staff that worked that night before were working that day. And they're trying to tell me everything. And one of them was Aaron Sharma, who was later was convicted of the of the part of the homicide. Okay. And this other guy was Mike Kennedy, who was also involved. It's funny how you remember these names, right?
So, yeah.
So sure enough, man, they're telling me these stories. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, hey, listen, if you're not going to put in a memo, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about it. You know, and you start getting those spidey senses, that sixth sense that there's something going on. And why are people talking to you?
Right. Trying to spread the dirt. What's they're trying to do?
Look around and you're like, man, they're not talking to anybody else. This ain't good. So I kind of like pushed back from that. Just did my shifts, try to stay quiet. Did the best I could. Even though I, kept having all these little bombs dropped on me all the time. And I'm like, yeah, this ain't good. And I'm just like, man, at this point, I'm like freaking paranoid. I'm like writing everything down. Oh, this happened. I think I still have some of those notes too. And then out of the blue, this guy, James Raby, he was an FBI agent attached to Coleman. I mean, what facility actually has a FBI agent attached that actually works there, right?
Yeah. Yep. So
I didn't know who the hell he was. He goes, and he meets me in the parking lot after my shift. He goes, hey, Glenn. Hey, what's up? He goes, hey. Shows me his badge. I'm like, oh, shit.
Right.
Hey, I'm James Raby. I'm an FBI agent here at Coleman. And I'm just like, where the hell did you come from? Where do you work at? You know? And he goes, hey, I need to talk to you. I'm like, it was rough. So I'm talking to him. You know, he's writing things down. I was paranoid, but I know it was happening. I was being followed. I don't know if it was the feds following me or it was staff following me. I wasn't sure.
Right.
And I don't care. This shit happens. You know, it does.
Sure.
It happens. So I'm kind of like, man, this ain't good. This ain't good. And by then, my wife at the time, she leaves the bureau and goes to North Carolina to try and help her father, who was pretty ill. And she starts to work for the U.S. Attorney's Office, right? And she'd call me on my shifts at night. She's like, hey, be careful. I'm like, I'm always careful. What do you mean? She's like, I can't tell you anything, but just be really careful. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, and then...
Right.
You pick up your phone and go click, 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 click. You know, just weird shit like that. You know, maybe I was paranoid. I don't know. Maybe I should have took more medication. I'm not sure, but something weird. some weird shit was going on. So they end up pulling me in again. And this guy, cannot remember his name. He was in the whole case with, that whole case with the homicide ends up going, the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Okay.
This dude pulls me in with Raby. Raby's like, by now, actually, Raby pulled me over one night. I'm on my way to work. Raby pulls me over. He goes, hey. I'm like, and by now, I'm just like, you know, I'm talking shit to this guy. Like, hey, man, you fucking treating me like shit. What the fuck? You know? And he pulls me over. He goes, hey, I got to talk to you. It's like, man, can't you fucking just like call me or something? Why the fuck you got to pull me over? What the fuck? Like, what is going on here, man? He's like, I just got to talk to you tomorrow. I said, all right, fine. What time? You know, this in the middle of Florida in some freaking cow country. and you know, you're already like, it's already like freaking 10:30 at night. You're like, why are you pulling me over? You know, you're like scaring the shit out of me kind of thing. You're like, you know, you're waiting for a UFO to come down and pick you up or some crap. So I go talk to him, and now this civil rights guy from the DOJ's there. If I could draw a picture of this guy, you remember the Heat Miser from that Christmas Carol movie? The Heat Miser.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Red yeah. flaming hair.
Right.
That's this guy. He's, you know, he's like, Mr. McDonald kind of thing, right? And it's like, this guy's, you know, he's young too. He's a lot younger than me. And I'm just like, man, this guy's really creepy. I'm like, for one, I was like, let me ask you a question. I've been in this job for, you know, by then it was maybe 12 years, somewhere around there. So it's not like I'm, you know, brand new, not new to the stuff, what's going on. And I've seen some shit already, right? So, let me ask you something. What do you want from me? Why are you talking to me? And it seems like you're only talking to me. Like, well, you're the only one who will talk to us. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, you are the only person that will tell us anything that goes inside that place. I'm like, well, you got a bigger problem than me and this case. So I don't know what you're going to do, but what do you want? So we can be done with this shit. Because you're ruining my life at this point. And now, you know, I'm never mind my career. My life is just upside down. You know, my wife at the time is living in North Carolina. I'm by myself in Florida working all these bullshit shifts. You know, it's stressful, bro. It's stressful. Really, really tough.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of people, I think it would have broken. It really would have.
Yeah.
It was that.
Anytime you're under investigation, which has happened, I think all of us at some time, maybe not to that level, but anytime you're under investigation, that's just horrible stress.
Oh, yeah.
That you don't need in a place that you're already stressed.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It was eating me alive, man. Just eating me alive. And, I end up talking to this guy. We end up going to trial. We go to the grand jury first. And he's asking me these questions and real quick though about animals. So when the DOJ guy and the FBI guy are first interviewing me, they're showing me these pictures, right? These handwritten or hand drawings. They're like, Glenn, do these look familiar? I was like, yeah, that looks familiar. Cause, Animal was a big time. He was a great artist, man. The dude, like Picasso, the guy, I mean, the detail and the faces and everything was like extremely incredible how detailed he was.
Yeah.
He goes, hey, and Animal would ask me all the time, hey, can you do me a favor and be like real quiet? Now, what's up? I was waiting for him to say, hey, can you bring me a pack of smokes or something, something like that?
Right.
Hey, can you bring me a picture of a fire truck? Yeah, I can do that. What are you going to do with it? He's like, I just want to draw. Okay. No problem.
Yeah.
What's wrong with giving an inmate a picture of a fire truck, right? So I, you know,
yeah,
slip him the thing to, you know, print off a picture of a fire truck or find a magazine, take a fire, yeah. Give it to him.
So, keep him busy.
Yeah, exactly. This guy lived up to his name too. Animal, man, what a problem. That dude was up.
Yeah.
Every time he was on a 3-man hold too. So anytime we'd take out, I'd go down there and, you know, escort him to wherever he's got to go. And he's always like pulling on me. I'm like, hey man, you better chill out, Animal. You're going to get messed up. He goes,
right.
Oh, McDonald, you ain't going to do shit. And he like tried to pull. And I was like, wham, I'd slam him against the, you know, he's still cuffed, slam him against the wall. I said, keep fucking around and see what happens. I'm going to take that baton. Right. That baton's going to be across your head right there. he was on baton watch and everything. So
sure.
I think he was just doing that just to see how far I'd go.
Testing.
Yeah. So we sit down with these two guys. And, at this point, man, I'm like, should I get an attorney, you know, kind of thing? Like, should I get my own attorney? Cause this doesn't even sound right anymore. So they should start showing me these drawings. They're like, hey, you recognize that picture? I said, yeah, I do. He's like, did you give him pictures to draw from? I said, yeah, of course. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that. We give books to inmates all, and they're like, no, you didn't do anything wrong. He's like, look at the drawing. And I just sit there and look, and I'm like, oh shit. He's like, yeah, that's you. That's, you know, somebody else, and that's somebody else. And like, but huh. look at what you're doing. And I, Mike, like one of the pictures was like, I was like standing on like a pile of like rubble, and I'm like holding a, like a rifle or a flag or something weird like that. Right.
Wow.
I'm just like, yeah, that's kind of weird. And, you know, it still like gives me chicken skin, my hair standing up on my arms.
Yeah. About it. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of weird. I'm like, hey, you know, that guy idolized you. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh yeah, we interviewed him a few months ago. But the funny thing is he wanted to kill you. Remember all them times he would test you and pull away from you? I said, yeah. You're like, he was testing you to see how vulnerable you were, because he wanted to kill you to earn his bones by killing
us. But they didn't tell you that a few months ago when they found it out.
Of course not.
No.
Why would you do that? So I'm like, okay, that's very weird, right? So then we end up going to trial. They're questioning me at the grand jury, and you know, I had to like explain like how to make hooch. And you know, I never made hooch, but I have a pretty good idea how they do it in prison, right?
Sure.
I kind of had to explain that to the grand jury and the judge, and they're like, that happens? I'm like, it happens all day long, every single day. You can walk inside a facility right now and you can smell it. I can like a dog, I can actually track it down and find it by just smelling it. And they were just surprised at what really went on inside facilities. So then I become like the key witness for the Bureau of Prisons, which was not an honor. It was, you didn't get a badge. You didn't get a medal for it. You got a kick in the teeth. That was it. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
It's part of our job to cooperate during investigations. And yes. You know, it says it right there in our ethics. Man, it's a long, it's a tough road to have to deal with.
Absolutely. And if you don't, you're putting other people's lives in danger, because whatever is going on is going to go on more. And what if Animal that day had decided to kill a staff member instead of an inmate, you know? So whatever anybody thinks about doing that, which I've had to do the same thing in investigations, go tell the truth. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it, but it's something that we have to do. The prison has to be a safe place for staff to work, and dirty staff make prisons dangerous places. So whether it's drugs or phones or whatever's got stamps, I used to see that. I used to see staff members who would pay inmates in the mental health unit off with crackers to get them to be quiet through their shift. They give them packages of crackers so that, hey, don't do anything on my shift. Well, you're just passing the buck down the road instead of dealing with it, and you're making it a more dangerous place to work. So I absolutely agree with you, and I know what kind of a spot that puts you in.
And then So then we end up going to trial, and you know, a lot of people don't understand, like, if you've ever been through training, like the legal part of training or any type of like supervisory type training in the Bureau, they tell you like, hey, if you ever go to court or anything like that, they're going to look at your training records. They're going to bring people up from your past that trained you. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Oh, you know what? I mean, since you were a trainer like I was a lot, the signature sheets at the bottom, guess what?
Uh-huh.
They miraculously show up after years.
Sure.
Years of training.
Sure they do.
So we're at court, and they're showing me these. They actually had two guys, some in the like kind of like the break room or wherever they had the witnesses. I was talking to these two guys. They're both Glencoe instructors from FLETC.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, what are you guys doing here? And, you know, just small talk. And like, oh, yeah, they're bringing us up for, you know, because, you know, we gave the initial use of force class to Aaron Sharman.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, man, she went to like FLETC like probably like 10, 12 years ago, probably, you know? And now these guys are here testifying, you know, yes, you know, I swear and all this. And yeah, I did that class for 2 hours 12 years ago, and I gave it to her, you know, kind of thing. It's like, right. Yeah, If they want you, they're going to get you. And, you know, they had the training records with their signature on it, everything. So it's like, hey, guess what, people? That does happen. It does. It does.
Oh,
happen.
Absolutely.
And now, you know, now everything is computerized. So now it's even tracked even more. You know? So end up going through that trial. Very overwhelming because I was kind of kept there for quite a while. I was there for almost the entire week.
Right.
They end up convicting her of being, they basically made her like the mastermind of the homicide. And they used, McCullough, John McCullough, John the Animal McCullough. That's his, if you've never, if you want to read an interesting story, read that guy's bio. You can Google it too, John McCullough or John the Animal McCullough, and it'll tell you a pretty long story.
Yeah.
So, and some very interesting facts in there too. So, she ends up getting life in prison, right? Life. Yeah.
Wow.
And at the time, her husband works there. He's an officer.
Oh.
Kind of weird. You know, this guy, his wife's going through trial for a homicide of an inmate, but this guy's still working.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, probably not a good idea to do that.
Right? You wouldn't think so.
Right? And so I think after that, what happened was, like I was saying, my wife at the time was in North Carolina. I'm just like at my wit's end. I was applying when she initially went up to North Carolina. I was applying for unit secretaries to, captain jobs, whatever I could get.
Sure.
Anywhere in between. Sure. I was trying to get it. It just so happens none of them I qualified for. I'm like, here I am with 15 years of bureau experience and you won't take me as a unit secretary in North Carolina. Like, I can probably run circles around you guys pretty easily. And at the time,
you're qualified if they want you. You're not qualified if they don't want you.
Yep. And
we've all seen that.
What a bunch of bullshit that was, I tell you.
Yeah.
And at the time, this guy, Tracy Johns, was the warden. That guy attempted to destroy my career. And he did a pretty good job at it. It definitely put me in a holding pattern for quite a while. When I was still there, I was still like all these things going on. I'm involved in this trial now. My name is like mud. The people that actually respect me and like me actually do. And the other people don't give a shit about me. And they're trying everything. I mean, the way I felt, they're trying everything they could to just ruin everything for me. And they did a pretty good job for a while. So that at the time, the guy that SIA, I know he was kind of involved in some kind of backdoor shit that they were trying to get me on something. They're either trying to make something up or make something happen to where I would be involved. So all these weird things were happening. Cause I was at Coleman for almost 5 years. So that's a long time. And I was at the UFP the entire time, except for the last 6 months. I'll tell you about that. But, all these weird things were happening. All these incidents on my shift were happening. And this one inmate comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, McDonald." He's like, I want you to know we're making sure you're going to be all right, but you got to be careful." It's like, you hear an inmate say that shit. You're like, "What the fuck is going on?" To this day, that was an FBI agent inside that prison. Definitely. And probably, I want to say it was a couple weeks later, that inmate was gone. Right. I was like, yeah. The SIA brings me over, go over there, and he's in the admin building, which is already creepy enough. So I get over there, and he's questioning me about some use of force incident. I'm like, "No, it didn't happen like that." Blah 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 blah. He goes, "Well, just want to let you know you're under investigation for excessive use of force." Okay, I said, "Bring it." Bring it.
Right.
Because I know, and at that time, Mike, I didn't care. I was like, you're full of shit. You're a fucking liar. You're F-U. I didn't care. What are you going to do?
Right.
Hire me? Send me to right. Coleman? Okay. What else could go wrong, right? So then I kind of like set this dude up because I know he's full of shit. So write a memo about the incident. I go over there after my shift. I slide it under the door. Oh, actually before.
Right.
I knew he wasn't there. I knew he wasn't there that day. I go over there. I said, hey, how you doing? Hey, do you mind time stamping this? She's like, sure, no problem. Boop, boop, time stamps it. So I have this time stamp saying when I turned in this memo.
So right.
Got it. Put it in my pocket. Come back later. And I gave her a copy. I come back later. I slip another one under the door. About 2 weeks later. Hey, McDonald, I got to talk to you. All right. By now, I'm walking around with a handy dandy little briefcase type of thing with all my documents in it. That's how bad it got.
All right.
I mean, I had 6-part folders with like this incident happened this way. Everything. Timelines, everything.
Wow, crazy.
Oh, bro, it was rough. So, I mean, I get over there and he's questioning me. He goes, well, you never reported the incident. I said, hold on a second. I said, this? Are you talking about this? He's like, where'd you get that? I said, no. I said, see this timestamp on here when I turned it in to your office? And he was like, God damn it, McDonald. You fucking set me up. I said, you're a piece of shit. That's it. You're a piece of shit. I said, so what else you got? What else you got for me? Because you know you're not going to get me. You know you're not going to get me. You know, at the same time, I'm trying to get out of there. I'm trying everything. I'm at ART at training, and there's like 300, 400 people at every ART for Coleman. It's just a huge place. Mm-hmm. There's like a ton of people there.
Right.
I got fired from DCT. Imagine that. So. I was still a firearms instructor, still a DCT instructor, things like that. But it wasn't, it wasn't coming around like it used to where I could train all the time.
Right.
I'm talking to this guy, Captain Smith from the medium. He just got there. So he's doing a class. New guy, doesn't know who's who. Probably heard my name, but he gets done with his class. And I go outside with him. I said, hey, Cap. I said, you got to do me a favor, man. You got money? He's like, yeah. He goes, I said, hey, you got to save my life. I'm like, what are you talking about? I said, you got to get me the hell out of that USP. I was like, I'll tell you about it later, but I can't tell you about it now. Man, you got to save me, man. Just get me the hell out of there. I need a break.
Right.
So he ended up getting me over to the medium. And it's weird how, Coleman's big, but it's still small.
Yeah.
And if you're stuck in that USP world, you're just stuck.
You know? Mm-hmm. Right.
And I get over to the medium, some great, great group of lieutenants. And they're like, hell no, I'm not going to that USP. Hell no. I get over there. I'm just like, I get along with everybody, man. Just some great, great dudes. There's some good dudes at the, in the lieutenant's office at Coleman too. Some really bad dudes too. So, I get over there. I'm on vacation in North Carolina, and the warden called me. She's like, I got two choices for you. You can be a correctional officer, a butler, or you can be a cook foreman. I'm like, that's pretty easy. I'll be a cook foreman. F custody.
Sure.
I'm done. Yeah. I know with cook foreman, I'll be skating. You know, I'll have a good time. 15 years in the Bureau. No problem. So I get that job. Immediately transfer as quick as possible.
Right. Right.
So I get up there and nobody knows who I am. I like just show up out of the blue. And,
right.
Guess who the warden is? Tracy Johns.
Right. Oh Lord.
Yeah. So, so I show up, I'm 15 years. I was probably a lieutenant, probably 7 years, somewhere around there. GS-11 lieutenant coming from a really, really violent USP.
Sure.
I got a couple nicks and bruises on me, but But I'm going to go. I'm like, all right, you know, hit the reset button. I'm going to do good. I'm going to get back on track. Right. So they assigned me to the low at Butner. I'm in there my first day. Had my nice light blue shirt on, my blue pants, you know, the old nasty uniforms. Had my tie on. Oh, I was all AJ squared away, right? So
yeah.
So I'm standing main line and talking to a few people. And nobody knows who I am. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
They didn't know I was a lieutenant. And they were like, oh, when did you start? I started not too long ago. I wasn't really like in the mood to really tell anybody why I'm there, but you know, that I've been around forever.
And right.
And all of a sudden I see Tracy John standing main line. And you know, in the front in the front of the dining hall, it's just a bunch of big windows. So you could see clearly out to the compound. He's standing out there. He looks at me. He's like, he shakes his head. He's like, you could see him just mouthing the words.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, like, I got you, buddy. I got you. Don't you worry. So, you know, I'm, you know, seasoned guy. The administration, the food service administrator, we all got along really great. Always hit me up with questions about security and this and that. So things were going really well. I see they post because at the time I want to say they're opening the new medium at Butner, and I think for some odd reason they needed two other captains, right? So I put in my captain packet, right?
And right,
IBQ, and everyone's like, who's this McDonald guy? Who's this McDonald guy? Nobody knows who the hell. All lieutenants. Like one lieutenant figured out right. Who it was. He goes, how long you been in the Bureau? I said, I don't know, 16 years now. Where were you before this? Coleman. What'd you do? I was a lieutenant. Where? I said, USP-1. He's like, now I figured you out. Oh, you've been hiding really good. I was like, oh, it's what I got to do, man. I got to protect myself.
Right.
Like he's like,
right.
Don't worry. I heard what happened down there. I was like, okay. So what do you got? What do you got to say to me now? Oh, I ain't got nothing to say. Yeah. He's like, you're a good dude, man. I ain't got nothing bad to say. And he named off a couple names I knew. I was like, yeah, good dude. So I BQ. And that same lieutenant comes up to me probably a month later. He's like, hey man, you know you BQ'd for that job, right? I was like, I know. He's like, Captain Smith wants to talk to you. Okay. I go up, see the captain. He's like, McDonald, you're a cook foreman. How'd you BQ for a captain? I said, Captain, how long you been in the Bureau? He's like, I don't know, 10 years or, you know, something like that. I was like, oh, that's nice. I was like, where'd you work before here? He's like, oh, I've been here at Butner the whole time. I said, oh, okay, I got three other joints under my belt already. And he's like,
right.
He's like, what? I was like, yeah, I used to be a lieutenant at Coleman and this and that. Coleman or a lieutenant here and I worked here and worked there. He's like, oh man. He's like, that's some good credentials, but I don't know if you're going to get this job going from a cook foreman to a captain. I doubt it. And like a couple, like, you know, like once the, I mean, you know how the promotion thing goes and like that,
sure.
That lieutenant comes up to me. He's like, hey man. He's like, John said, you ain't got shit coming. You know, I tried to go back to a lieutenant. I just had nothing. I had nothing coming to me, which was, you know, yeah. Understandable. You know, that's fine. It didn't really.
So where'd you get your captain at?
It didn't really bother me. So then I was still at Butner. This guy, Hank Simmons, was my administrator. And I said, hey, Hank, I got to get back in the game, man. I just can't do this anymore. He goes, what do you want to do? I was like, I want to go somewhere. I want to go to the worst place in the Bureau. I was like, what is the worst place in the Bureau? He's like, as far as what? I said, violence. He's like, probably Pollock. He's like, they just had a homicide, you know, a couple weeks ago or whatever. I'm like, I want to go there as a right. Lieutenant. He's like, all right, let me make some calls. You know, and I apply and I get picked up for Pollock, which I absolutely love Pollock. Pollock was, man, it was awesome. Just awesome.
Right.
From like day one, like, I get down there. My wife ended up getting picked up as a, She unit secretary, maybe. So she left the U.S. Attorney's office, got back in the bureau, and we both went down to first day there. It's like three body alarms, spraying inmates with gas. I was like, this is, oh, I love it. Love it. I'm back, back in the game.
Right.
Sweating my ass off. It's like freaking boiling ass hot.
Oh, yeah.
Having a good time. Meet a bunch of great guys and gals. Things really clicked down there, man. Really clicked. And Donnie Cartrett shows up, who is one of my mentors from back in the day. So it's like the quarter was up. And if you don't know anything about USP Pollock, look, you can look it up and you find a lot of bad things happen there. A lot of violence towards staff and inmates. I end up getting put at the medium as like even watch ops or something like that. And Donnie just got there, and Donnie was an officer at Danbury, I think just before I started. And he was a real, real hard charging guy. And I'm over there at the medium. He goes, the door's open in the captain's office, and the other captain's in there. And he goes, hey, McDonald, come here. He's like, he's very forceful, right? But he's doing it in a kind of a way to where you think he's like super aggressive or he's like a dick to you, but he's not. He's just, he's like testing you kind of.
Right.
Everything is always like a selection to him, like let me see what you got kind of thing, right? So so I go in there and I was like, yes, Captain. He goes, hey, what are you doing over here at the medium? Like, this is my assignment. He's like, as of tomorrow, you're going over to USP. I need my compound back. I look at the other captain. He goes, and him and John Gradiska were the captains, and John and him worked at Beaumont together, so they had a lot of time together too. He goes, you heard what the captain says. Tomorrow, you're working at the USP. Okay. I was like, and I looked at Cartretta, said, so what do you mean take your compound back? He goes, you know exactly what I freaking mean. Like, just make it fucking happen. 10-4. So next day I go back over to the USP, and I seen him before the shift started, and I was on evening watch, and my activities was Lee Fitzgerald, which is an awesome dude. Unfortunately, he left the bureau. And so I told him, hey, man, Bartrett wants the compound back. Guess what? We're going to take it back. And I mean, some crazy, crazy crap was going on. I said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to slow down mainline. We're going to control it, everything. Because, I mean, bro, like they'd let these inmates out, the place would just go mad. It was like a war zone.
Oh, wow.
All the time. All the time.
Yeah.
You know, and people like, oh, you're full of shit. Like, no. We'd open the doors, the place would go crazy.
Yeah.
Like the first.
Slow things down.
Yeah. Like the first move. And me not knowing Cartwright was still there. Like the first night, and we let this one unit out. This dude comes out, F you, and all this talking, all this crazy trash to us. And it was like a dog pile. I mean, there's probably like six of us. This guy's like coming, running at us, you know, and like fist pumping. It's like, all right, come on, let's go. Wham! We just smash him. And we're like on him. Put him in cuffs, drag him off. And we're like, shut the compound down. And all the inmates are like, oh shit, like uh-oh, it's on now. So I remember we get that dude down into and it was hot, man. It's like, you know, Louisiana's like, it's just another level of hot, the heat, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you're just covered in dirt because of the compound, like all the grass is dead. It's like dirt everywhere. And we're like wrestling this dude down. He's got like, by now he's like got basically mud all over him because he's sweating so much. We get him down the shoe, and we're like, why'd you guys, you know, now he's crying, right? He's like, why'd you guys treat me so bad? Why'd you treat me so bad? It's like, you come out talking shit to us, guess what we're going to do? We're going to take care of you.
Right.
I said, matter of fact, spread the word, because it's going to be a new world in here. Yeah, man, we kind of like changed that culture of how it was running and slowing things down, making sure it was always secured. And Cartrett's watching. The whole time he's like, I'll be up front in the SIS off watching on the cameras. And, so I end up, dude, I got 1,000 stories about Pollock. Worked a lot with this.
So when did the fitness, because that's definitely something I want to get into with you. When did, I know you do the Rucks. I know you're big into health and fitness, and that's kind of what you're doing in retirement. Mm-hmm. When did that come into play? Was that when you were having some of the problems and you needed that to,
funny thing,
you know, bring about? Or
when I was, when I was in Danbury, one of the things the VA did was this pilot program of it was like therapy through fitness or something like that, you know, like making us do all these, like, I remember this one time we were like riding this bike, like riding as hard as,
right.
For the guy's like, all right, you're going to ride as hard as you can for 2 minutes. I'm like, okay. Riding the bike. I'm like, all right. And then he'd ask you a bunch of questions. Okay, this is kind of
weird. Right.
So I was like, and then, you know, and I was always kind of like into like working out, stuff like that. And then I just, honestly, man, I blew up like a freaking balloon. The stress, everything that I was going through, I blew up like, I was fat. I was disgusting. I hated it. Hated myself. So I ended up, when I got to Pollock, I was really, really super heavy, really out of shape. But it was funny, like even when I was really out of shape, I'd work out all the time still, thinking I was doing really, really well.
Right.
But in my mind, I was still like big giant fatty, right? Yeah. And even back then, before rucking was cool, I was rucking all the time. People would see me out on the trails in Devon's, Mass. I'd have a big pack on. I'd be snowshoeing around, right, around base, and all kind of like, people are like, what the hell are you doing? And I'm just, oh, I'm having fun, you know, to me, it just feels right. Good, you know, just to get that energy out, you know, breaking a sweat and doing something very, very difficult for me it felt great. You know, it really did. Felt great.
Right.
It helped me.
And that's went from like a personal thing to, is it a competition now that you go to, or is it more of just a group activity? Because I ask you about the patches behind you there.
The rucking patches? Oh, so, if you see all these here, these are all the events I've done. Well, some of them. I don't have all my patches up there. I probably got about another, probably 20 more somewhere. Just stacked up somewhere. Kind of lost track. I've done over like 100 and probably over 120 now. Can't really remember how many. I just don't.
Well, tell us what a ruck is.
Right, so,
is it just a group, or is there a competition to it? Is there levels, or I haven't been part of one. So,
well, a ruck is actually just a backpack. It goes back to,
right.
It goes back to legionnaires of when they'd have to carry equipment, you know, over many, many miles carrying all that equipment to go to war and things like that. And I guess the military, took that concept of rucking as, you know, just carrying a bunch of weight. And then in the Marine Corps, you know, the job I had in the Marine Corps, even as a cook, guess what? Well, we called it in the Marine Corps. Imagine that. We called it humping. We'd have to hump our gear.
Right.
So we'd go on these humps all the time with all this freaking equipment. And, you know, it'd break you off. It'd break you in half. You'd be like, damn, that's odd. It'd hurt. So I ended up, you know, kind of like when I got out of the Marine Corps, I'd be like, you know, I remember how good that felt, you know, that the pain, the enjoyment of it, and just being outside. I don't know. I bought a backpack or found a old military backpack or something and start rucking. I just throw like a bunch of crap in there. Start rucking around, be like, oh, this still feels good. It hurts, but it still feels good. And then I just kind of kept with it. Yeah. And then when I was in Pollock, I met a couple guys. Well, I met this one dude, Rory Perry. He was an officer. And at the time I was like really big into helping veterans and part of this veterans group called Team Red, White, and Blue, which they help veterans through physical activity to help them get back into society, things like that. And I was like, man, this is like a no-brainer, right?
Sure, sure.
So I met Rory and said, hey, man, and Rory's like a, he's a combat veteran from the Battle of Fallujah, which is like one of the worst mm-hmm. battles the Marine Corps ever had in the Iraq.
So, absolutely.
So we talk all the time, and I really, man, I was like, I love that dude. Like, freaking love him. He's just an awesome dude. Had a lot of trouble, a lot of PTSD issues, things like that. And I'd do my best to help him out the best I could. Really struggled with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I said, hey, man, I said, let's do something really hard. He's like, all right, let's do it. And Rory's jacked. You know, he's like, he's a sort guy, freaking jacked, right? I was never a sort guy.
Right.
I was a PCT fatty, right? So, you know, I was worried about pizza and stuff like that. And this guy was just like eating freaking cinder blocks. So we start rucking. I'm like, hey, man, let's, you know, and at the time, I think I did like a Tough Mudder and like a Spartan race or something. I was like, wow, that was really hard. Right. That was so hard. It's like, no. So I always look at what's the next hardest thing. And then I found this company called GoRuck. So it's a company built by this guy who's a special forces army guy. And he'd make these backpacks, right? And then it went to a backpack challenge where you take that ruck and you put, depending on what your weight was, you put a certain amount of weight in there and you'd show up in the cadre, which would be like him or a few other people. Because at the time it was so small, it was just a small, small group of people.
Right.
Underground type of thing. And they would show up. And all these guys were like special operations guys, like Navy SEALs, special forces, at the time, Marine Recon. And these guys would just put you through absolute freaking hell. And you'd have to wear the backpack.
Right.
All the time. Like, ding, ding, ding. This is like winner for me. So we find an event in New Orleans, downtown New Orleans on, I want to say the day before Halloween. So basically, just like one of my anniversaries of like, I can't remember how many years I've been doing it now. So like 11 years probably.
Right.
Since then, I just like, you know, I just love it, man. It's so painful.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 53 now, and it really takes a toll on me now, big time. So I really stayed the best I could. I stayed in really. Tried to stay in the best shape I could, even, you know, aging as I was, still working full time. And I would always, you know, I'd find an event, you know, wherever, somewhere. And that, you know, when sure. I first started is pretty, I mean, they'd have, within a year, they'd have probably like 300-400 events throughout the country. I'd find the closest one to me. And it was really big. It was pretty popular to go to New Orleans because everybody loves New Orleans when I was working at Pollock.
Yeah.
And they'd had events there all the time. So every event I'd try to go. And I would at the time.
Give you something outside of work to.
Oh, yeah.
Give you something outside of work to look forward to and train for.
And that, you know, and that's. Yeah.
I did the same thing for a long time with the heavy games and the Scottish Highland games. Right. And it was just something I could think about at work to get that off my mind. So that was working the same way for you.
And I see a lot of staff now. I'm like, especially when I left, man, they were just like, they don't do anything. It's like,
right.
Oh, what'd you guys do last night? Oh, I played video games all night. What do you mean you played video games? Like you come in here and we, you know, you're sitting in front of a computer all day. Or, dude, you got to get outside and do something. Right. And then, but then I got into CrossFit pretty big. When I was in Pollock, started doing that. I love that. I love doing that. Really, really hard stuff. And I was that guy like, hey, we're going to do this really hard workout at what they call a hero wad workout of the day. So it's designed to memorialize a fallen, soldier or a Marine or anybody. So, and these
a veteran,
if you've never done a hero wad, they will kick your ass. Right? They're built to be very, very difficult. So I'd be that guy during the hero wad that would wear a gas mask, something a little bit stupider, or a helmet, or, you know, something like that.
Make it just a little tougher.
And people are like, man, you're freaking badass. And I'm like, I am. I'm like, I'm slow. You know, I'm terrible. I just kept doing, you know, just kept doing those hard things. And I really, really, really enjoyed them. Yeah. Sometimes, man, I look back at some of the events I've done, and they were absolutely the hardest things ever. Yeah. Even harder than the Marine. Yeah. So, but it's just, to me, it's just an outlet, you know. And the couple of places after Pollock, I went to Mississippi as a deputy captain. I continued it there, continued my fitness stuff there. Still doing CrossFit, still doing GORUCK events. I gave up on that Spartan crap and the Tough Mudder, because who the hell wants to be electrocuted? I mean, if you're looking to do something, the hardest thing you probably will probably ever do for fitness is go do a GORUCK event. Go try one.
Okay.
And you will get checked quickly. I mean, I've been to events where people don't last 20 minutes and they have to quit.
Yeah.
They just either not.
And this has become something that's been since you've retired. I know, you're into this strength and conditioning. You've started a podcast. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. I know you ended up in Chicago, and that was, we talked about that during the last one, but what are you doing now with retirement and strength and conditioning? And what can you tell the people out there? I mean, how important is it to have that physical outlet?
Well, for me, like when I still continue to do CrossFit and GORUCK events, a lot of training time on my own for some of these events. And then I was like, you know what? I need to do something with this the best I can. And going in and out of Chicago, I took the train in and out of work every day. So I listened to different podcasts. I listened to like Jocko, Clear to Hot podcast. I don't know if some of the other ones are around anymore. And you know, that stuff just like resonated with me. It really motivated me to, want to do those things, like get after it. Like you need to get after it. Even as hard as our job is physically and mentally. I mean, you see it, Mike. I mean, you see people just falling apart, man. They're like, not saying I'm some fitness guru, but I mean, to not have that outlet of working out and pushing yourself past your limit, what's going to happen when Mike is getting stabbed or Mike's getting beat up or something bad's happening? What are you going to do? Are you going to just like cower in the corner or run the other way? Or are you going to do the best you can to get over there to try to save Mike's life? Or what if you...
Sure.
I had an incident where we had to give a staff member CPR because he had a major heart attack inside the institution. People were just falling out because they couldn't handle like giving the guy CPR. And this is one of your fellows.
Yeah. I mean,
you know,
it's one of the first things you probably learn. You see that on TV and you know, the doctors and nurses run in, they go pump, pump, pump. Yeah. Giving somebody CPR and doing it for even 5 minutes, but sometimes as long as 20 or 30 is an absolute, it'll kick your butt. Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
you gotta be prepared for that stuff.
I remember, running across a compound in Pollock, you know, 1,000 degrees, running across an incident, and Pollock was pretty good. There's two rec yards,
but it's a big one,
tenant's office and the closest housing unit. Running across there and going as fast as you can, cause you can hear a staff member kind of, their voice is elevated inside a unit or, you know, something bad's going on. You're running across there. Your adrenaline's already pumping like crazy. You're like, what am I going to walk into? And you get in there and you're already whooped. Guess what? You're just another liability to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are definitely a liability. And if you're not ready for something like that, it's something that is really unfortunate because you got, I mean, people just don't, I think they take it for granted. I'll be all right. No, you won't. And
yeah.
And if they're not doing,
it sounds like one of the things you've done And I read an article not too long ago about being comfortable being uncomfortable.
Very. I like.
And you kind of like making yourself uncomfortable, so you're comfortable when it comes time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So riding back and forth from Chicago, you know, listening to the podcast, I was like, you know what? You never hear anything about correctional staff. From what I remember before I retired, you were already retired. I don't know if we were talking like on email maybe, or, and you know, you're like, hey, I'm going to start a podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know? And then I don't know if you sent it to me or I found it and I listened to like your first or second one. I was like, man, that's a really freaking good idea. And you know, you kind of talk about more like, the policy of it, the training, do's and don'ts of that. And I try to, I think my podcast, I try to more talk about the stories and what people have gone through, you know, and let them talk, let them talk about it, because I know for myself, it's really helped me as far as like getting the things that, you know, like that story about Coleman. I mean, it still affects me to this day. It does.
Oh, I'm sure it does. And
people are like, shit, that doesn't bother you. Like, yeah, it does. You know, some bad things happen there. Bad things, you know, you see some of your friends that got hurt through the years, or not just physically, but mentally, you know, I mean, like I retired, what's today? Today's my 1 year anniversary. Imagine that. So today's my 1 year anniversary.
There you go. Congratulations.
Thank you. And our chief psychologist from Chicago, great guy. He's a psychologist. The guy has a hard time just talking about what happened. Like I had lunch with him probably like 2 or 3 months ago now. And I'm like, dude, where have you been, man? Because me and him were really tight and we really worked well together. He's like, I can't do it. I can't talk about it. I can't, you know, I wasn't even bothering him about being on the podcast or anything like that. He's like, I can't deal with it. He's like, I can't adjust back to this life. And he's a chief psychologist. It's like, like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're having trouble, what's wrong with us?
Yeah. Oh, it changes you. It absolutely does. And sometimes there is no going back. You know, we make the best out of it. But we leave prison a changed person. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to be the person you were when you first walked into it. So, thank you, Glenn. I appreciate you coming on here. Can you tell us where they can contact you or find your podcast?
Okay. My podcast, you can look it up on either Facebook or Instagram. It's under Mainline Strength and Conditioning Podcast. And it's on also, I have a YouTube channel that has all my my interviews right now. So go ahead and take a look at it. Let me know if you ever want to talk to me about another podcast or if any of the people you've interviewed. I know you've talked to quite a few people. I would love to, you know, tell them how I feel about things. I just love, I don't know, man. It just feels good to talk about it. So.
Yeah. And it's good for us. And I think it's good for the people that are listening because they get to understand, you know, you're not the first person who's ever dealt with some of that stuff. You did it at Coleman. There's a lot of staff out there who've had to make those decisions. Yeah. So I think when we talk about this and when we bring it up on these podcasts, it makes it easier for everybody. So I thank you for that. I thank you for sharing your stories. And
real quick,
we'll talk at you soon. Oh, you got something? Go ahead.
So if anybody, if anyone who's a current employee or, you know, even if you're retired, if you, you can look me up, and if you you're having trouble with your like fitness and you want to get back in shape or you want to get ready for SORT or DCT or anything like that, let me know and we can talk offline and I can build you a program for a very minimal fee, because I'm not looking to make any money. I'm just trying to help people of getting you back in shape. So I just love to
know. Oh, it's a great resource. I appreciate that.
Just let me know if you need anything. Just
that's
let
great.
Me know, man. Okay.
I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. Brother, thank you,
take
Glenn.
Care.
I would like to take a minute to thank one of our sponsors that make the Prison Officer Podcast possible. Omni RTLS is a company that I've been working with for the last year. I am proud to be part of this team of correctional professionals who have developed the best real-time locating system on the market today. With Omni's real-time location technology, you automatically know the accurate locations and interactions of all inmates, staff, and assets anywhere in your correctional facility, and you have this information in real time. Omni is cutting-edge software for today's jails and prisons. It is the only way to monitor every square inch of your facility while still being PREA compliant. Go to www.omnirtls for more information and to make your facility safer today. That's www.omnirtls.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, the best way to support the Prisoner Officer Podcast is to share these episodes with your friends or family on social media. Let me invite you to visit www.theprisonofficer.com. If you haven't already, check out the Prison Officer Podcast on Facebook and click that little follow button, or leave us a message, or better yet, leave us a review. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Google, or Spotify, please click the subscribe button. Till next time, I'm Mike Cantrell. Watch your back, and please take care of each other out there behind those walls.